it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Listen up, Friar Faithful. 97.3 The Fan's Padres Roundtable is on the air.
Unbelievable!
It's time to discuss everything going on with the Padres. The 97.3 The Fan crew is here for the most in-depth discussion on the Friars in our weekly Padres Roundtable, delivered by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. And now, here's your host, Ben Higgins.
You know what? I'm just skipping the introductions. Let's just get right to it. We're talking about bunting this morning on the roundtable. We will welcome you in. We're commercial free for the next hour. And again, thank you to San Diego Roundtable Pizza for making this commercial free and possible, for bringing us the pizzas. And as I asked Adam this morning, yes, someone comes in early to make us our pizzas every Thursday. Keep us fed here on the roundtable. Really appreciate it. It really is pizza royalty. Yeah, you know who everyone is on the panel. I don't need to tell you their names. We had a long discussion this morning about Jackson Merrill trying to lay down a sacrifice bunt in the fourth inning of a 0-0 game against the Cincinnati Reds last night. Part of the Chris small ball identity that Mike Shildt has instilled in this team. Now, he may not have called for a bunt there. In fact, I believe Jackson Merrill did that on his own. But is that the right way for the Padres to continue to proceed as they struggle to score runs here late in the season?
Obviously not. Didn't work last night. If he gets the bunt and it works and he gets second and third and DeHern comes up and gets a two-run double, then nobody's talking about it. I will also say in the bottom of the ninth inning, had they asked Ramon Laureano to bunt, which was totally something you would never think of doing, Jackson Merrill's fly ball would have brought in the tying run.
But Jackson Bunting Merrill gets walked there.
You think he would have walked the go-ahead run and put him on base?
Yeah, for Bryce Johnson, 100%. 100%. Jackson Merrill's not getting a chance to hit that fly ball.
First of all, I wanted to say thank you for coming to me first. Secondly, I think you should go to somebody else first, because I still think Mike Shildt's a good manager. I still think Luis Arraez is a good hitter. I still think a bunt is something you can use in baseball. But none of those things are coming true right now.
You can.
So I'm going to let everybody else.
Yeah, I think you can use the bunt. The bunt has proven for this team, especially earlier in the season, that you need to scratch out a run or two here or there. But like, it just comes down for me of I think Jackson Merrill going up there looking to do anything other than damage. And the way I described it on the air today was, it's like a flu, and it's this, well, I better get this down because this is smart baseball. And in actuality, it's not the smartest way to score runs. And, we have AJ Preller on tomorrow, and I'm going to ask him, is it the chicken or the egg? Because you're 23rd in runs scored. Is it because you bunt, or are you bunting because you're 23rd in runs scored in baseball? I don't know what the answer is, but I just know that mentality is not going to lead to a big inning. And like Paulie made the point today, with a couple of your best arms down last night, playing for a big inning seemed a lot smarter for me.
Matt, we talked to Eno Saris this morning, and he pointed out that the Padres don't just bunt more than the average team. They bunt about twice as much as the second most bunting team in all of baseball. To be that far outside of what has become the norm, is that good to do things differently? Or is that a sign that, you're not with the times with Major League Baseball if you're so far away from what all the other teams are doing?
I think it's okay to do things different. Every team is unique and every team is built a certain way, but that stat kind of floored me a little bit, because I don't think that you can be that different in regards to bunting. Bunting is something that they can use, and they have used very well throughout the season, but Jackson Merrill has, what, two triples, a double in the last couple days? I want to see him try to swing. I
almost went yard last night too.
He did. He's starting to feel it. He's starting to find it. The bunt can help, but in certain situations, like last night in the fourth, like, I want to see him swing away. So
Braden, the bunt, you know, helped the Padres win a game on Monday. I don't think anyone disputes that there are situations like in the 10th inning and you're moving a run over from second to third that it can be a useful tool. But is it a useful tool in the fourth inning of a game with two runners on and nobody out?
I think it's kind of early for that. I think you're basically, you know, conceding that we're trying to win a one-run game. We're just trying to get that one run. We just want to get that one, you know, run early. I think it shows a little bit of signs of desperation early on. And I don't mind bunting in the grand scheme of things, right? And sometimes when your offense is not going very well, you got to find different ways to create some type of spark. And, you know, maybe Jackson Merrill dropping down a bunt is something that could do that, show some sacrifice of his at-bat for the betterment of the team. So, you know, from that grand standpoint, I'm not, like, totally against it. But, you know, the fact that it's the fourth inning, the fact that, you know, as mentioned, you're not going to have a lot of your arms available. You don't really want to get into a one-run contest with a team like the Reds. And you can play for a big inning with a guy that is finally getting some luck. I mean, Jackson Merrill has had zero luck all season long. He finally got earlier this week that ball to go off the center fielder for that triple. You're starting to see some hits land for him. I think that's kind of a rough timing spot for him to decide to bunt. Maybe he's overthinking a little bit. But looking at what you said with the stat of the over bunting, I mean, I think there's uses for bunting in baseball in this day and age. I'm not an anti bunt guy, but the fact that they are bunting twice as many times as the next team that bunts a lot is a sign of, okay, maybe we're doing this a little bit too much when we have guys on our team that could go out there and swing the bat a little bit.
You know, Paulie, we didn't really bring it up this morning, but I think it's worth mentioning. I believe Jackson Merrill squared on the first pitch and took it for a strike and then squared again, bunted it at the first baseman, who was charging really hard. Was it Stewart?
Yeah.
I believe, yeah. Charging really hard because other teams now know what's coming. If you don't bunt that often and then you kind of pull it as a surprise, there's a chance you may catch the other team off guard, get a base hit, get an error out
of
it.
Like Friedel did.
When you have other major league quality defenders knowing what's coming, expecting it, they're going to take advantage of that. And I think we've kind of hit the tipping point in my mind that the Padres have become too bunt-oriented and too predictable.
Yes, I agree 100%. The predictability is hurting this offense. And when the predictability, if you put yourself, like you were just saying, in the minds of the defenders, I mean, knowing what's going to happen next is such an advantage. And it's also not like, hey, I know they're going to hit one at me, 107 off the bat, be ready for it. Because that's still a tricky play to make. It's a bunt. And a bunt is so practical defensively. They got the wheel play, like whatever the situation calls for. Everybody's got a spot. You know exactly who's covering where. It's a very simple way to get an out. And when you don't execute, like if Merrill hits it down the third baseline, maybe something happens and we can get a base hit. You know, you got two runners in scoring position and it works out okay. But when you bunt it down the first baseline and then it's just a complete wash, you've taken the bat out of a guy who you're trying to get going and he's been showing really good signs of heating up. I absolutely hated him deciding to take his own bat out of his own hands, because I don't believe it was called from Mike Schilt or anybody else. I do believe that it's almost been like beaten into him, like this is our process and this is what I need to do. And I want to see him swinging for the fences, because I'll tell you right now, a three-run home run does a hell of a lot more for Jackson Merrill, does a hell of a lot more for your chances to win that game, does a hell of a lot more for everybody that's on the rail in the dugout. They're all hyped up. It changes so much, and I wish that we would go for the big swing a little bit more often than we are.
All right, we're off and running. It is our 97.3 The Fan Padres Roundtable, presented commercial-free by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. It really is pizza royalty. Last week, if you'll all remember, we were fairly at a low point in the season when it came to starting pitching. It looked like clearly that was going to be the Padres' issue going forward into the playoffs. Lo and behold, 1 week later, six consecutive good starting outings. Not all of them quality because they didn't all get to six innings, but six straight outings that at the very least gave the Padres a good chance to win the game. Now, they only won three of those. So as we sit here, and Woodsy, I'll start with you. What now is your biggest concern for the San Diego Padres? Does it remain starting pitching? Have you moved on? Do you feel comfortable now that the Padres have gotten their starting pitching lined up well enough for the postseason?
Yeah, I do. I feel okay with it. And again, in the postseason, the kind of the rules are off as it pertains to the bullpen. They got off days built in. I think you'll see guys extending themselves a little bit more pitching-wise, especially in the bullpen. But for me, it's the offense. It's Manny Machado in particular. Super concerned about, four hits in the last 30 days or something. Like, it's about a rough a stretch as I've seen from Manny. And if he doesn't get it going, it's going to be a tough one.
You're the last person who usually gets concerned about Manny Machado. No, I'm concerned? Or
yeah, I mean, I'm concerned that the results aren't there, and really it's not. I can remember, a couple of balls he got unlucky on, great plays. But other than that, man, I think, he's not really getting the job done. And that's tough. That's tough. As a super fan, it's tough. But it's also tough as a Padres fan that wants his team to go on. And, seeing some frustration from him the other night, smashing a cooler is weird. It's weird. It's not who Manny really is. He's usually blowing bubbles when he takes an 0-for-12. And, to watch him even be frustrated is rough. But, no, it's probably the offense for me is the number one thing. You got to score.
What about you, Chris? Are you okay now with the Padres starting pitching as it probably will head into a wild card series? Pivetta, King, Cease, or Pivetta, King, Darvish, for a three-game series? Is that something that can get you to the second round of the playoffs?
No, I'm not okay with the pitching at all. And I think that, we're talking about the bunts. We're talking about the decisions that are being made in the lineup. We're talking about a lot of different things. But the two things that make this team successful, in my mind, and have made it successful all year, are one, pitching. Their pitching has been less than stellar throughout for the last 16 games. The bullpen has lost six of those 16 games and has a 4.70 ERA, which would make it one of the worst in baseball if that were the stat for the whole season. So they're about 2.5 runs above normal out of the bullpen. The other thing that makes this team go is Manny Machado. And when he's rolling, they roll. And when he can't hit, they don't roll. I don't get it, but, Gavin Sheets is getting a hit every time up.
Yeah.
Fernando's, starting to swing it. Merrill's starting to swing it a little bit. Crony's come up with some big hits. You put it all together, they don't get anything unless Manny does something. And right now, 9-for-65 is a .138 batting average over the last 16 games, 3 extra base hits, and only 3 walks. He's not doing anything. So that is the concern. Manny pitching. The rest of the stuff, it doesn't matter that much compared to those two.
Braden, what about you? Are you satisfied with what you've seen from the starting pitching rotation the last week?
I think from a playoff standpoint, with bullpens being the thing that wins in the postseason, and I have faith in Ruben Nieblen and company to have the bullpen ready to go in the postseason. And from that perspective, I think you have enough. It's enough starting pitching where you can win. It's not like a glaring concern. Here's the other thing too: everybody that has a problem right now that's a contender has a pitching problem. The only one that doesn't is the Brewers. And they had an article in The Athletic about like the major question mark for every playoff team, and it was picked by each beat reporter for The Athletic. They all picked pitching, with the exception of Milwaukee. There was a couple that were different, but like for the Dodgers, it was what offense is going to show up. But the first line was, we could really say bullpen here, but we're going to change it up and say something else. So everybody is dealing with the same pitching problems because nobody has enough pitching. So from that perspective, I think the Padres pitching, and honestly, the Padres might have less of a problem than we think compared to every other team in Major League Baseball. I'm going to go along with the Manny thing. The Manny thing is a little concerning. Now, the 5-game winning streak that the Padres had in the last month where they swept the Giants and won the first 2 games of the LA series, you know what Manny hit during those 5 games? He hit .333. And all of a sudden, they won a 5-game winning streak, right? And then you look at the rest of the month, and he's been awful. They did win those 4 games that they won with Colorado and the Cincinnati, like kind of turnaround. He also didn't perform very well. But it's kind of funny. I had to look at it about the man, because we always say it, and I just kind of assume that's going to be the case. But you look at the numbers, and it's crazy. As Chris said, everybody else is starting to hit. But the guy that's not hitting is Manny, and all of a sudden the offense can't move, you know, really do anything. So I think Manny is a little bit of a concern, but I just you give that guy $300 million because you know he's going to get right, and I think eventually he's going to get right. I don't think this is going to continue for the rest of the season, but Manny needs to get in gear here in the final 16 games of the year.
Wouldn't we be super nervous if he was on one of his torrid paces right now today with 16 games
too
left?
Early.
I think we'd all be like,
too
oh my
early.
God, he's peaking right now. It's
Are we worried about him peaking?
Yeah, we worried about peaking too.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Soon. As long as we're on Manny, would anybody be in favor of like flipping Laureano and Manny, moving him down to fifth and moving Laureano up to third?
Everybody but Manny, I think.
Everybody but Manny. And probably Mike, too.
And probably
tell
Mike,
him.
Yeah.
She'll
probably
want to tell him that.
I think, Manny Machado's the guy who can find it at any point.
It's true.
He could go 4-for-4 tonight and then go 10 for his next 13. I don't think that Manny can be moved. He's the only guy in the lineup I think needs to be anchored.
I agree with Matt, actually, because what happens if you move Manny to fifth tonight and you move Laureano up to third and Manny goes 3-for-4 with a 3-run home run? Do you think, oh, well, I can't move him out of fifth now, right. But you really would want him back at third, and now you've created this dilemma that's completely self-inflicted because you moved him out of the three spot.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough. Guys get comfortable in spots. They did this a little bit with Jackson. Jackson was barreling balls last year in the 7-hole, and your natural inclination, and I think we even asked A.J. Preller or Mike Schilt about it, like, oh, Jackson's really profiling as more of a 3-hole hitter or 2-hole hitter. And it's, you know, he's comfortable because he's hitting 7 and he is locked in. And consistency means so much to these guys on a daily basis that, I mean, you know, and you got the skipper in place that doesn't like to move it around very much. So I think, you know, waiting for him to figure it out, I don't know. I think he has a track record. We've talked about it. Got to come soon, though. I think
he's earned that track record too.
Yeah, you don't have a lot of
You don't have a lot of choices, but yeah. I think he's earned that too, yeah. As being the focal point of this team.
For sure.
Paulie, back to the starting pitching. Does the return of Michael King do enough to stabilize the starting pitching now going forward based on what you saw on that one start?
Yeah, if he pitches like that, I'll take that every time. I think, of course, Michael King is a huge addition, much needed addition as you come down the stretch here. I still do have concerns with the pitching, though. Kind of echoing a little bit what Chris was saying, like, we've been using the Jekyll and the Hyde, you know, comparisons over the last few weeks. Like, okay, that was a great stretch right there, those last six games. But, like, what are the next six going to look like? Because if they go back to good, bad, like, then we're right back at square one. We still have that issue. Like, I need to see a couple of consistently good starts out of Darvish and Cease before I start feeling more confident in the starting pitching. But I think if King gives you anything close to what he gave you on Tuesday, you hope for the best from Darvish, and then you go with, you know, Pivetta in game three. Like, that's your wild card rotation, and I'll take my chances for sure.
It's our 97.3 The Fan Padres Roundtable, presented commercial-free by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. It really is pizza royalty. Got a new feature. I know it's very late in the season to be debuting something new. I wish I had done this earlier. This is called Tell Mike Schilt How to Do His Job.
Oh, don't we do that every day?
This is great.
I think
he's really going to appreciate the help, though. Someone will probably bring him this segment. He'll go, thank goodness someone's looking out for me and telling me how to do my job.
Let's play this with him next Friday.
I think you should. Too. I think it'd be a great idea.
So today on Tell Mike Schilt How to Do His Job, and Chris, if you want to start us out.
Chris gets to go first.
How should Mike Schilt handle the shortstop position until Xander Bogaerts is ready to return? We've seen a number of different strategies used there.
I like Cronenworth there. I don't have a problem with Jake. I have been defending him all season long against the analytics that say that he is a terrible second baseman. It's the analytics that say it. Not me. I watch the guy play. I love to watch Jake. Of course, as soon as I said that, I think he kicked away two games in a row, you know, by missing ground balls. But, yeah, I'm fine with him at short. But at the same time, you know, Rise at second isn't exactly make me comfortable. So I think you mix and match. You get a little Iglesias against a lefty and put Jake at second and sit a Rise. And against a righty, you go the other way and sit Iglesias, a Rise at second, Jake at short.
Did he just say sit a Rise?
I did.
Wow.
That's called growth.
That's called growth.
Don't make a big deal out of this, guys.
I have never promoted Luis Arraez for team MVP. All I've said is that there must be some reason he still bats second. I'd say it. I don't disagree that he's not hitting well enough compared to other guys. But the team was in first place 2.5 weeks ago with him batting second all year. Now they can't win. I don't think that that's the reason. That's the only thing I've said. It doesn't mean that I don't think, you know, he's not hitting well right now, so I don't mind taking him out.
Woods, that's called growth.
Brayden, are you in favor of Jake getting the vast majority of the playing time at shortstop until Bogaerts is back? Obviously.
What's the update on Bogey? We know he got cleared for baseball activity.
Yeah, I still think that there's some ramp up that I don't think he's able to sprint fully or anything.
Like,
you got to play catch, stand in the field. Still, he's still a ways away.
So are we thinking like a week? Are we through the end of the regular season?
Optimistic timeline was the last week of the regular season. I don't think they've advanced it beyond that. You know, still trending maybe toward a week and a half.
So you're talking, for this question, most of the next week and 16 games.
Yeah. Most of the rest of the season.
The segment's not called how to Tell the Padres Doctors How to Do Their Job.
Yes, it's Tell Mike Schilt How to Do His Job. Should he play Jake Cronenworth on a mostly everyday basis?
I think so. I thought, out of your choices, and to me, I would rather build a lineup based on your bats and then figure out the defense afterwards. That's just kind of my philosophy on baseball. I think some people have that same opinion. A lot of people want to, you know, have a strong defense first and then figure out the batting order second. So from that perspective, I thought the best way to do that would be either Jackson Merrill or Jake Cronenworth, and I thought you pick one of the two and have one of those guys do it. Padres pick Jake Cronenworth. Sounds good. I think that gives you a great opportunity to get as many of those good bats in the lineup, like Sheets and O'Hearn, as possible. And with that, you're okay with Jake Cronenworth playing shortstop. You don't need Jake Cronenworth to make phenomenal plays. You just need him to make routine plays. And Jake Cronenworth's going to make the routine play. He's not going to be a defensive liability at shortstop. Now, does it create a little bit of a liability with Luis Arraez having to play second? Yes, I would say that. But, you know, I kind of agree with Chris with the Jose Iglesias thing with the lefties and sitting Arraez. I mean, I think that's a way that you can do it. But overall, whatever you decided to do, and I think they decided to pick Jake Cronenworth as we saw him on Sunday, I think that guy needs to get every single rep at shortstop for the remainder of the season until Xander comes back, because when you get to the playoffs, you're going to need him to play shortstop if you want your best nine batters in the lineup.
Matt, same question to you, and let me also throw in, because there was a lot of discussion about it, are we a fan of Mike Schilt's late-game defensive substitutions that he makes? You know, obviously in the last game, you would have liked Ryan O'Hearn coming up instead of Bryce Johnson as a pinch hitter, but he made those defensive moves late in the game to protect a lead. Do you think he should keep doing that if Jake Cronenworth's out at shortstop?
I do, because I don't want to lose a game because of someone making a bad defensive play. And if they're going to go with it, this has been their strategy all year with the late game defensive replacement. I don't think you really need to change that until you get to games where everything's on the line. The regular season's way different than the playoffs, but there's one other thing out there that I don't understand is for me, it's Jackson Merrill moving to shortstop is not an option for me. Why would you want to move a guy from center field to shortstop?
Because you need a shortstop.
Because he played shortstop his entire life?
I understand that, but you're going to put a guy back at shortstop making his major league debut at shortstop late in the season?
Are you saying he's not athletic to do it?
I didn't say that.
Are you saying he can't do it? It sounds like you're saying he's incapable of playing shortstop as a major
listening?
League baseball player.
I don't know.
You're
listening.
Making it sound like he can't play shortstop.
No,
is what
I don't think Brayden's
like.
Listening at all, because he just put words in my mouth. So
I'm just saying, you're making a lot of assumptions there that he can't play it.
I think playing shortstop at the big league level, even if you've played it all your life, some intricacies that might take at least a spring training to get comfortable with, and Jake's just been around longer. He's gone through it all, even at shortstop a couple of times, even the minimal number of the games that he's played there. I think it makes a lot more sense to have Jake out there. I don't know that the Woods, I don't know that the late game defensive improvements actually improve the team defensively all that much. No. If you're moving Arise to first and Jake to second and bringing in Mason McCoy, are you really that much better of a defensive team when you know you're giving up the possibility if the game becomes tied or, you know, the other team scores?
Like
you've gotten
night.
A lot worse offensively at a very critical juncture when you need your best at bats and late in the game.
Well, the thing that makes me a little nuts is, like, last night, you know, O'Hearn's off the field for your best defense, and he's your best defender at first base. So I don't really understand what's going on most of the time, to be honest with you.
Well,
but
I told it to you this morning. I don't think he's valued as the best defensive first baseman in the management, whether it's AJ, Schilt, coaches, whoever. I don't know that they view Ryan O'Hearn that way, even though the metrics, and my eye test at least, says he's the best defensive first baseman. I don't know that they value it because we're just not seeing it.
Yeah, we're not seeing it at all. And but I, you know, to your original point, I've belabored this point every day. Give me my best sticks in the lineup and let me see what I can get. And if I can get a lead, if I'm up 4-2 in the eighth, then I need, you know, Mason to come in and play short. Or could he play second? Mason McCoy, he can play second,
right?
Probably
second.
Iglesias certainly can.
If he's healthy. So I think, you know, let's try to build a lead early. And then that's when you want to put your defensive, not a, you know, a one-run lead. Okay, fine. But, you know, it really backfired, as it does. It happens to every manager. It's not that big a deal. It's not on Mike Schilt, to be honest with you. Like, that happens. You're trying to get sure up your defense.
The minute that they don't change out defense.
Something
will happen. If somebody kicks a ball,
would
you? It's going to be this. The complaining is going to be just as loud as it was last night.
But let me ask you this.
I don't know what you do.
Let me ask you guys this, though. And we talk about this a lot. Like, and I know you don't manage this way and you don't live this way, right? But if you put out that lineup every day with Sheets, O'Hearn, Arise maybe down a little bit, like if you put that out with your best hitters in there every day, let the chips fall where they may with your best hitters, and you lose, aren't you better with that than trying to do some of the kooky things that they've done?
There's risk involved, right?
You
have to give something up to get something in return.
Correct.
I hate comparing everything to football as the football guy, but like when you call a defense, like if you want to bring pressure, you're going to give something up in the secondary.
Yes.
If you want to play sound defense in the secondary, the guy's going to be he's going to have all day to throw. And you're damned if you do, damned if you don't. So you have to give something up. So the question is, because Scraby said he doesn't want to lose a game with a ball getting kicked around. You are going to lose a game, okay? Would you rather lose the game with a guy kicking the ball in the field or your worst hitter up at the plate with the game on the line?
Right.
So, like, basically, would you rather have Jake Cronenworth boot a ball at shortstop to lose, or you punch out with Mace McCoy at the plate with the season on the line? What are you more comfortable with losing? Because that's the risk you're going to take. To me, if you put your best sticks out there and you lose on a bad play, you're like, you know what? That was the risk we took to try to score some runs.
Yep.
I'm okay with that. If you're more of a defensive guy and you're like, you know what? We tried our best. They got more hits than us. We can't be relying on Mason McCoy. We got to, you know, it's the way you do it.
Look it up though. Bryce Johnson, I honestly think, was 5 for his last 6 coming off the bench.
He had a 5-game
until that at bat. And he struck out. So they risked it that way. Let's dive a little deeper into, should you play defense or should you play offense? I think the team that really started this in earnest was the Dodgers. They started playing any player wherever they could play him to get the best 9 guys in. What happened to the Dodgers? They had the best record in the league every year, so it worked. And then when it came down to the playoffs and making plays makes a difference, they lost every single year. And it was like, they're never going to win. And I think one of the reasons they lost is because they didn't make plays on defense. So I don't want to give up all my defense.
You only get to pick one thing.
You're referring to something that's happened in the last 16 games with the Padres. Well, everything's been bad for the last 16 games.
I think in terms of overall baseball, whether it be hitting, pitching, or defense, the least important out of the three is defense. That is the least important.
You see championship teams. They have sacrifice defense, right? Red Sox used to throw Manny Ramirez out in left field. He had no idea what he was doing. None. But he hit absolute tanks, and he hit 450 in a World Series. And you're like, we can put up with a ball that gets past him for a double instead of a single. I do think when it comes to, you know, they always say pitching and defense wins championships, but I think we've seen over the last few years that bullpens really win championships, and being able to hit the ball out of the ballpark wins championships as well.
Teams that slug
win the World Series.
Well, I think to what Braden said is, in baseball, there's a chance when you put someone out in the field,
they never get
no
a ball.
One hits a ball to
yes.
them.
Correct.
If you put them in the lineup, they're going to get
three or four at-bats.
They're
going to get an AB, yeah.
Guaranteed. You know, and if you have good pitching, like if you had bad pitching and a good defense, but the ball's going over the fence, does it really matter?
And I will point out on last night's defensive changes in the top of the eighth inning, Luis Arraez was coming up second. In the bottom of the eighth, Ryan O'Hearn was coming up seventh. So if you're going to take one of those guys out, it kind of made more sense to leave Arraez in because he was coming up sooner. And you may not – right. If everything went well, Ryan
O'Hearn
was
never – That's value on offense, not defense, though.
Well, but if you were – if everything went well, Ryan O'Hearn was never getting up again, and Luis Arraez might have helped you add on to your lead in the bottom of the eighth inning. So I thought that actually did make sense.
Which you would love, you want him to think like that, right? I mean, you can't be thinking and making decisions based on like, well, if everything goes very, very wrong right now, we have to be extra prepared. You can't prevent everything from happening.
I do think, though, to your point, and Chris, I think nailed it, you know, I think Crony is your shortstop 100%. Moving forward. I really do. I think he's your shortstop moving forward. Well,
think about it from like just a fan's perspective, watching the games. Like, are you, if they lose a game because Cronenworth's out of position and boots a ball at short, you're upset. But what if Mason McCoy boots that ball? Then you're like, why the F isn't Cronenworth in there? Like, let's not act like Mason McCoy is a 100% going to make every single play. He's human, too.
Yep.
And there's a reason he's like the last guy off the bench. Like, you know what I mean?
And that's why Ben asked the question. It's not, how much better is this team defensively? With the defensive changes than they currently are. It's not like the Padres right now are a bad defensive team.
It's incremental.
Because I know in that hypothetical, if I'm watching the game, yeah, I'm bummed that Crony boots the ball and we lose the game or whatever, but I'm furious if Mason McCoy is the one out there.
But everybody's upset that they did the defense last night because it came down to one at bat and that should have been Ryan O'Hearn.
I'm not really.
But you cannot project Ryan O'Hearn automatically hitting a two-run homer either.
No, but you feel
you can't project anything. These guys are all on the ball club for a reason.
Chris,
there's 26 guys trying to get the job
seasons
done.
On the line, would you rather have Bryce Johnson?
Yes, I'd rather have Ryan O'Hearn up.
That's the conversation.
I would, but if I have a one-run lead going into the late innings of the Game 7 of the World Series, I don't probably want Arraez and Cronenworth as my infield combination.
What was maybe the right decision to take Jake? He was the furthest away from batting. Take Jake out, leave Arraez at second, and O'Hearn at first, and then if you did get up to seventh and you had an important situation for O'Hearn, he still would have been in. I don't know.
The only thing I'm mad about was the bunt last. That's it. Everything else I understand. That's just how baseball games go.
I get the defensive changes when you have like a massive, massive liability in the field. Of like Manny Ramirez, right?
They don't out and
you
left.
You put Bryce Johnson in for Gavin Sheets.
Yeah, I think that's fair, right? Yeah, exactly. But to me, some of the changes are like they're not massive upgrades defensively. If it's a massive upgrade defensively, then go for it.
They're massive downgrades.
That's my point.
Offensively.
I don't know that Mason McCoy is a massive upgrade even Jake Cronenworth.
Not to justify him having a swing.
It's our 97.3 The Fan Padres Roundtable brought to you commercial free by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. It really is pizza royalty.
You guys understand that I have to say the things I'm saying to continue getting my weekly check from Mike Schilt.
Right.
You guys get that, right? Because there are people who think that I only say nice things about him because they pay me to do that. So I just want you guys to understand that's the reasoning.
So this question is a little more philosophical than specifically Padres related. But, of course, Padres 0 for 14, past 2 days with runners in scoring position, 2 for 22 in the whole series against the Reds. Just going to ask you guys, do you believe hitting with runners in scoring position or being clutch is a real and important element of baseball, or is it just a combination of random factors, as the stats would lead you to believe? Woods, you're nodding. I know you believe in clutch.
Oh, man, if you have a guy that has the ability to drive in runs, and I know, you know, people say RBIs don't matter. There is something about, you know, stepping to the plate, less than two outs, runner on third. Can I get him in? Can I hit a fly ball deep enough? Can I hit a single? Whatever. There is an art form to it. There is a mental makeup and fortitude. Some guys have it. Some guys don't. Some guys are great at it. Some guys get a lot of opportunities. But what do you do with those opportunities? I love an RBI guy, man. Give me a guy with 100 RBIs every year. I love him. Give me a whole team of them. I win everything.
And we got into a bit of an argument because I said, oh, RBIs don't matter. Of course they do, because you're driving in runs, and runs absolutely matter. But why, Paulie, then, are there so much fluctuation between guys season to season with runners in scoring position, with teams month to month? One month you hit 320 with runners in scoring position. The next month you hit 180. Same guys. It just fluctuates all season long, as though no one can really control being better or worse based on if there's a guy on second or third base.
It's hard to quantify it. There's not a lot of like statistical measure behind it, and people we try to come up with formulas to determine clutch, and then it's like, okay, well then maybe that's just subjective on what you value or whatever. But I do think there is something to it, like what Woods was saying, like it's like a confidence. It's honestly a confidence thing. Like, I'm going to go up there, I'm going to drive in these runs. It doesn't happen. Baseball's weird. You know, baseball can happen and you can drive one into the gap and a guy makes a great play or something like that. But it's like, it's how are you feeling? Right now, when you're not feeling good, you're going to see a lot of passive approaches and, hey, maybe I can just look to draw a walk and keep things going instead of, no. Like Jackson Merrill yesterday, for example, I'm going to drop this bunt down and we're going to move guys station to station. Like, no, dude, let it rip. Drive those runs in with a gapper or a home run. That's kind of where I'm at. It's weird. It's a little bit of both, I think, Ben, in this hypothetical. It's a little bit of like, yeah, there is something to it. You can't quite put your finger on it, but that guy's got it, that clutch gene. Or baseball's just random and weird. And yeah, one month you could have felt great, but you have no numbers to back it up. Another month you're like, I wasn't even feeling that great, but a couple of balls fly in or drop in and all of a sudden you have a good month. It's weird.
Matt Scraby, RISP, clutch gene or random statistical noise?
I think I'm with Paul. It's a little bit of both, but like in football, there are certain quarterbacks that can make the plays when they need to make them, and you know who they are. Patrick Mahomes is the first one that comes to mind. In baseball, you hate guys because they always make clutch plays when you're watching or when they're playing against your team. I think it's both. I think that some guys do get up for those situations, and I do think that – I don't think the runners in scoring position is as like tied to clutchness as everybody else may feel, but – I do think that clutch is a gene for some of these guys, and I feel like some of these guys perform their best when the brightest lights are on.
I think your mind is playing tricks on you. Okay. Not just you, but in general. You brought up Patrick Mahomes, and yeah, he comes through a lot at the end of games. But you know what? He also comes through a lot at the beginning of games because he's a really, really good player.
That's a good point.
And I don't know that he changes and becomes a better player later in the games. I don't know there's any baseball player who changes and becomes a better player when runners are on second and third. Now, Woods, there are guys who are good at making contact, which is helpful to drive in runs.
Yes.
That doesn't make them clutch. That makes them who they are. And you want those guys up with a runner on third and less than two outs. Yeah. You want guys who can make contact. I don't know that they're clutch or better under pressure.
No,
they're
but
just
like a Hall of Famer is a guy that hits one out of every three.
Right.
But if those other two are the always the ones that have runners on base, then you're not going to say he's a clutch hitter.
But no one acts like that. The numbers will tell you that no one, you know, consistently performs way above their numbers or below their numbers when it comes to runners in scoring position.
The all-time leader in batting average with runners in scoring position
Tony
is
Gwynn.
Tony Gwynn. He was a pretty good hitter just generally.
Generally a good hitter.
Do you know who the only guy who had a better batting average than him heading into this season before now Gwynn's back on top?
Uh-oh.
Luis Arraez.
I knew that.
He's a good hitter, at least till this year, right? So
hit him fourth.
I agree with you, Ben. And for my here's the example I'm gonna cite. Last night, two outs, tie game, runner at second for the Reds. I believe it was Miguel Andujar who was at the plate. Is he clutch because he got jammed and barely dribbled the ball over the shortstop's head that drove in the winning run?
And Adrian Morrell is not a clutch pitcher because...
Oh, right. Well, yeah, would he have been more clutch if he hit a line drive 380 feet that was caught? So are we going to look at Miguel Andujar and go, man, he's clutch. He didn't have a good at-bat at all, but he won the game.
If he did it consistently, you would say he's clutch. But again,
I think it's consistency.
You can't isolate one.
The best clutch hitters are the best hitters. That's what's there.
Well, and see, I think that, you know, Ben's point is...
Kyle Higashioka was clutch last season in the playoffs, but he was not, like, our best hitter.
No, but I think, you know, I don't know. It's there is a mindset to be able to get those runs in. And the guy with... For me, if I see a guy with 100 RBIs, I'm like, hell yeah. That's the 100 RBI guy to me still means a lot because it's such a hard thing to do. Hitting is hard when there's no one on base. Hitting is really hard when there's a runner in scoring position.
See, now, Paul, I'd say Kyle Higashioka was hot last year in the playoffs at the right time, swinging the bat well. I don't know that the playoffs caused him to be better than, you know, he just was hot. It's batting. You know, you're going to have some random noise in there. Brandon,
this is very philosophical. I know, chicken in the egg.
This is a bit of, as I said at the beginning.
Hang on a second. Braden hasn't spoken yet. I'm a little worried where he's going here. Sliding over a tad.
I'm on your guys' side. Right. I think it's random. I think, you know, there's athletes that you think of that seem like they have been very clutch, and they're usually some of the best athletes out there. But, you know, if you look at the history, like I've looked at these numbers a lot. On Fangraphs, I mean, Manny Machado has not been clutch in a Padres uniform. I mean, he hasn't. Statistically, with runners in scoring position and high leverage situations, he hasn't. But that doesn't mean, you know, I think a lot of people would say he would be a clutch hitter. One of the most clutch hitters on the Padres in the last 10 years is actually Eric Hosmer in terms of late games, high leverage, runners in scoring position. Everybody hates Eric Hosmer, you know, so like, I think I agree with you, Ben. I think it's, and every situation is different. Oh, who are you going against? Are you getting a hit with runners in scoring position against the Rockies and padding up your stats with runners in scoring position, or are you doing it against the Dodgers in a playoff game? I mean, there's different situations. I agree with Chris, like with Miguel Andujar getting jammed last night. I mean, baseball is such a weird sport that I think it's kind of random when it comes to the runners in scoring position. In terms of RBIs, I agree with you too, Ben. I mean, I think getting hits with runners in scoring position is important. I think having RBIs is an older stat because you have no impact on guys in front of you getting on base. So if you have no impact on the guy getting on base in front of you and you have less opportunity to drive in runs, you're going to have less RBIs than everybody else.
But I mean, look at the guys that are leading RBIs in the big leagues right now. Kyle Schwarber with 123 stakes.
Yeah, 40 of those are his own runs on home runs.
50.
Yeah, 50.
Right? Pete Alonso, Cal Raleigh, Eugenio Suarez, Riley Green, Junior Caminero, Rafael Devers.
But if the guys in front of him always get out, is it his fault for not driving in runs?
Good like
if
he,
no,
I
mean, no, it's not his fault.
But he has no say in guys getting on base in front of him.
I guess my point is you're not going to find a 230 hitter who then always comes through in the clutch and has 120 RBI because he's not a good hitter.
Cal Raleigh's hitting like 240.
Yeah, with 50 home runs.
Though. 50 home runs.
Is it clutch or is he a good power hitter?
He's
a good power hitter.
Let me ask you this. Again, one more thing on the clutch from another sport. Was Michael Jordan clutch?
Yeah, but he missed a ton, too.
He missed a million game-winning shots because he took them.
Yeah.
Kobe Bryant also missed a million of them.
Tiger Woods, he clutch golfer?
Yeah, he's pretty clutch.
He's a great golfer.
He just got hot. He just happened to get hot at the right time.
You know what? Maybe, he's clutch on the 17th hole.
Jack Nicklaus finished second in the majors, 19 times? Yeah. So Jack Nicklaus choked away 19 majors.
There is something about the atmosphere of a big moment. There is something to that.
Is KK Hernandez. He's clutch. He hits 210.
Are there guys who get overwhelmed by a big moment? Probably. I think it's not that high. Once you get to a professional level in every sport, I don't think many of those guys are crumbling under the spotlight of a playoff series, but there are a few.
The analytics, they can get too black and white sometimes. Like if you're talking about football, a 60-yard field goal is either made or lost, but it's like, hey, a 60-yard field goal with 10 minutes to go in the first quarter is a little bit different than 3 seconds left on the clock, down one. Like that pressure that has built up, it's still going to go down in the scorebook as made or not made, but there is an absolutely a difference there.
That's why when they say he made it in warm-ups, I just laugh. Yeah, it's tight. No rush.
He was clocked to make it.
You mean the weather was different? There was nobody in the stands.
It's on a perfect little tee that's ready to go.
Yeah, nice. We need a little seventh inning stretch.
Nice job, Ben. You wiped out the rest of the show.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Joe, we need to take a little break from this discussion, and we'll go very easy. I always like to go back to food. It's been a couple of weeks on the seventh inning
stretch.
We
love talking about food on our show.
What's your favorite donut?
Sprinkled donut. Someone cake, asked me sprinkled this donut.
Yes, really? All right, then you get to go first, Matt, since all you've right. been thinking about it
my
already.
My favorite donut is a maple bar.
A maple
I love
bar.
The maple
bar.
Do you put bacon on it, too? Are you one of those guys?
Ooh, the no, fancy I've never kind? Really yeah. had the bacon. I've never really had the bacon, but just a,
there's no need.
Just a traditional maple bar. But when I was a kid, I ate jelly donuts like crazy.
Jelly? Do you strike like me as a jelly crazy. Donut guy?
I know jelly donuts are disgusting right now.
Like powdered sugar on the outside, or like it's a glazed so jelly donut? What type of jelly are we talking to? By the way,
that's like red. Strawberry raspberry.
Okay. How disappointed were you when you bit in and it was the yellow one instead of?
Oh
the
yeah,
one? I would never.
Yo, yeah, dude, don't disrespect the customer.
My favorite.
Man.
All right, Woods.
Oh, it's VG's chocolate covered glazed.
Chocolate
glazed. That's a good one.
It's just on
anything VG's.
It's the best donut.
VG's.
North County guys are the VG's donuts.
By the way, if you're not a North County person, yeah, VG's.
Hey, I've had them all. I've had Roses. I've had all of them. I've had every donut in town.
Peterson's in Escondido.
Peterson's is fine. I've had Peterson's. I've had them all.
In Lakeside too.
There's nothing that comes close to a VG's donut. Nothing.
Paulie, what's your donut of choice?
I like the chocolate bar, the maple bar, but with chocolate instead. Yeah, the maple bars are fine. I was never a huge fan, but I did like it's easy to hold, easy to eat. Like,
it's very easy.
Yeah.
Quick aside, the donut circle versus the bar.
I like the bar.
I like the
actually.
Bar. Yeah, always, I think I like the so bar, much too. Easier so much better. Better.
The circle now, is hard.
It's hard.
Yeah. The problem is, for a chocolate bar guy, is you run the risk, which I have bitten into him before, of getting a chocolate eclair.
Boston.
Right. They look very similar.
They do.
And you're like, what's in there?
Watch out for the cougar tails, dude. Watch out for the cougar tails.
You take one bite, it's like running down your...
You guys are disgusting. Get your head out of the gutter.
Braden, favorite donut?
I like the caked sprinkled donuts.
Caked? Oh, the first non-raised?
I don't like the raised stuff. It gives me a stomach ache. The caked donuts are better to me. I like the sprinkled ones.
You'd be surprised. I won't even eat a caked donut. I won't even look at it.
Do the rays will give me some serious gut rot. But that's to me, if that's in the box, that's definitely the donut of choice. I do like a good Boston cream. You guys are gonna get weird, but you know that's good. Just don't have it in cougar tail form, and I think you'd be okay.
Chris Ello, donut of choice.
Well, I factor size into my choice.
Of course you do.
Sure you do.
Size matters. Yeah.
A big Boston cream pie.
Nice well, easy, claw. Big dog. I want the largest donut they got in the store.
I didn't hear that.
Yeah, bear claw.
Not apple fritter.
Bear claw.
Don't be the apple fritter
guy. I'm similar. I like the cinnamon roll, and not the baked cinnamon roll, you know, from the can. The fried
is that a donut?
Circular cinnamon roll donut.
You know, Ben would be the guy. It's the one that
like when you pull it apart, it has like rings.
Sounds like a cinnamon roll, not a donut.
Sounds like a cinnamon roll. Yeah.
Well, but a cinnamon roll is like it's got the cinnamon and sugar. Like it's like a cake. It's
He's
more
like
about,
I like the biscuit.
My favorite donut's actually French toast.
The donut,
like the creme brulee French toast donut.
Everyone knows what I'm talking about. The cinnamon roll donut, not the actual cinnamon roll.
I know what you're talking about. Yes.
And if I'm in a convenience store, though, the powdered sugar Edamame's.
Oh, yeah. Really?
Oh, murder the powdered sugar ones.
Like how do you stay clean?
You don't
after that.
Actually.
You don't. But it's
you look
just,
like Pablo Escobar when you're done. It's worth every second of it, and it stains your white shirt, brushing it off. No, I didn't get donuts. I was doing cocaine. I wasn't eating white donuts.
What's the worst donut? Like. The office always. I've had a bit on the office donut guy every time, just because they to me people that bring donuts to the office just seem give me 12. I don't really care.
Yeah,
and they get the randoms.
And they get a bunch of randoms that they can't sell. It sucks.
Unfrosted cake.
Yeah,
Who orders those?
The cinnamon powdered one.
Well, when
disgusting.
You just go in and ask for 12, they're trying to get rid of those.
The office donuts.
Unfrosted donuts.
The guys that pick up donuts to the office are the ones that clean out the donut shop of all the ones that nobody likes.
I will say I can remember like the donut, like the best donut that I think I've ever eaten was when I was like 10 or 11 years old, Krispy Kreme moved up to Washington. Nice. Like the first one in the state of Washington. You made a trip. I mean, you had to wait like an hour.
Yeah, hot off the press. Yeah,
but
though,
when you were waiting in line, that it's just their most basic donut. It is a glazed donut. It is nothing special outside of that. And when you got the hot one for free, by the way, Ben, for free, while you're waiting in line, I don't know that any donut has ever tasted better than that one.
Melts in your mouth.
It's unbelievable.
All right, a couple minutes left. I've got to have another hypothetical after last week's win. So very well. All right, so today's hypothetical, and Woods already tore me apart for this one on our show. You've got a fresh bullpen, must-win playoff game, and a one-run lead after six innings. So you've got everybody left. How are you kind of approaching this now between Robert Suarez, Mason Miller, Adrian Morejon, Jeremiah Estrada? Who are you trusting? And as Woods pointed out, he wants it to be matchup dependent.
Sure.
So it may change depending on who's coming up. I mean, Chris, obviously.
Well, our problem was, all right, are we on the road or at home? Who are we playing? Yeah, what part of the lineup's at? Like,
but are you saving Robert Suarez for the ninth inning, Chris, in that situation? Or are you possibly using him in the seventh inning?
Chris is right so now? Irritated.
Can't you ask me after he saved a couple in a row rather than after he gave up a home
he
run?
He was fantastic on Monday. Fantastic.
Look, I looked it up on the show, I think yesterday. I looked up the top 25 guys in Major League Baseball with the most blown saves this year. Robert Suarez isn't even on that list.
He's had a lot of opportunities.
Yes, he has, and he hasn't blown as many as a lot of people. He gave up a home run the other night. I get it, but I'm not changing things. I'm not changing it. That's it. I'm not.
But you wouldn't rather have, if the game, the season was on the line.
He's not changing it.
All right, let me change the hypothetical then.
Your entire livelihood's on the line?
Ninth inning. You've got a two-run lead in Game 7, and both Mason Miller and Robert Suarez are healthy and available.
Mason Miller.
Is anybody going with Robert Suarez?
I'm not.
What's the score? There's one answer here.
It's Mason Miller.
They're both right-handers. So
top of the order.
Take the matchups out.
Mason Miller.
Is anybody going with Robert Suarez over Mason Miller?
Yes. You are still get out of here.
He's the ninth inning
guy. And you're leaving him
guy.
On the bench. But he hasn't been used yet.
Miller can come in if Suarez looks shaky, or he can pitch the 10th.
Three batters later, the game may be over.
I don't change the entire 162 games way I've managed
for that. Make Chris's house on the line or something important to him. He changes
You're willing to let the season go. Mason Miller not even getting into the game in that situation.
Mason Miller has more blown saves this year, I think, than Suarez does.
I think you're right.
I can't overreact, you know.
It's not overreacting.
I think it is.
Is Chris potentially right, Woods?
I mean, look, I think, it depends on so much, right? It depends on so much. Who's pitching well? Who has pitched well throughout the playoffs? Who's been overworked? How many times have they gotten a look at him, right? All that. But if you're looking at just stuff, it's Mason Miller. He is the nastiest stuff in the game. And I think, you know, I tweeted the other night, my agenda to get him to closer starts tomorrow. That was more of a coping mechanism. Robert Suarez has been really great. I wouldn't mind seeing a Robert Suarez in a softer spot, like because the matchups favor him. You know, his pitch mix favors these three guys.
Even if
it's the seventh inning. I don't care. I just want to win ball games. It's not about feelings, and especially for guys that may not be here next year. I want to win a World Series, and whatever we have to do, if that means Manny Machado pitching the ninth, I don't care.
Okay, you're welcome, Braden, but didn't we lose a game to the Dodgers this year because Suarez pitched in the eighth and Miller was being saved for the ninth? You can't have everything. You guys want everything. You guys want to go 162-0 and make the right call every time. You can't have it.
I'm going to flip it around. Matt, if I am a fan of the other team,
who do I want?
Who do I want to come in the game in the ninth inning?
That's a
my team the chance.
There's no question.
I'd rather have Robert Suarez
coming in the 100%.
All right, Chris, you got to take an AB off of either Suarez or Miller. Who are you taking?
You're taking
you
got a better
Suarez.
Chance to get
hit. I'm going blindfolded either way.
I'm actually going to go Yuki Matsui there. I'll just wave at the splitter.
There's something to be said that Robert Suarez has been really good this year. And,
last year, and every year.
And I don't know why we always get so mad at Robert Suarez. But then you got Mason Miller throwing 104 and throwing these nasty sliders, and it looks really good to the fans' eye.
Suarez is just susceptible more so than Miller to the long ball, and that's what can kill you in the ninth, especially if, you know, clean inning, not a runner on second or anything like that.
It's wild.
You know, the game, it's like I said, it's so dependent on so many different things. The game can sometimes be
one
in the eight.
Each guy given up this year?
I can't look it up that quickly. Mason's given up. We saw him give up one with the Padres.
He's given up
on a fastball.
He's given up two runs.
He says his slider's his best pitch. If I had to get a big league hitter out, I'd rather try to do it with a slider. You know, you're going to run into something, you're probably going to run into a fastball, and they will run into Mason Miller's fastballs occasionally, not often.
Bro, he couldn't even locate a slider the other night, and he was still able to go 102 up, and you can't change your mind. And it was a ball, and he swung because he literally subtracted his slider. I think it was Matt McClain, subtracted it because he couldn't land it. But he still goes, all right, that's fine. 102 and his bayou, he couldn't even get his bat off his shoulder.
I like Mason Miller's fastball-slider combo way more than Suarez's fastball changeup combo, which is not even that much.
I know that sliders are the greatest pitch ever, but guess...
if you hang one.
See if you could get Dennis Eckersley to agree with you.
Yeah, if you hang one.
Yeah, well, Robert Suarez doesn't have a Dennis Eckersley changeup.
My quick research... They've both given up 5 home runs this year.
It's a tie.
Well, Mason Miller is pitching in the bandbox.
Well, I think it's nice you looked it up because Paul just matter-of-factly said that, you know, Suarez gives up more home runs, which is what we think.
I said
it may not be true.
He's more susceptible to it. I just said, and this was way before Monday, by the way. Ben and Woods can both attest to it. I have the vision of the Padres season ends and Robert Suarez is walking off the mound because of a home run.
Yep.
I can't see Mason Miller doing that.
Did we forget about the last 2 months he had last year? Are we forgetting about those last 2 months?
That was a fun one.
No, we all can continue this discussion for the next 2+ weeks for the rest of the regular season. That's it for us. For Matt Scraby, Stephen Woods, Paul Reindl, Braden Soprano, Chris Ello, I'm Ben Higgins. Thanks to Roundtable Pizza for making this all possible. It really is pizza royalty. No Roundtable next week. We'll be back for the final week of the season in 2 weeks here on San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.